Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of Smallville, the young Superman TV show that ran from 2001 to 2011. I'm your host, Zach, and this week I'm joined by...
Lance, once again, I'm back on the farm.
What's up, Lance? Back on the farm, back at the mansion, back at the Talon. Well, not the Talon yet.
No, we're getting... Beanery.
The Beanery.
Which I have thoughts on, but we'll get there.
You know, I used to be annoyed by the Talon, but I'm equally annoyed by the Beanery.
So... Yes.
Apologies to the Talon. So this week we're talking about Shimmer, Smallville's 10th episode of its first season. But we're going to take a brief aside here. So spoiler warning for those of you who aren't caught up. We're dating the podcast here. Theoretically, it's supposed to be an evergreen podcast. But hey, it's a little slice of life what's going on right now as we record. So as we record, we are currently in episode, and we're currently in season 4 of Arrow. What I once described as being better than Smallville ever was. And boy, do I owe Smallville an apology. Because, okay, so here we go, guys. Spoiler warning, if you are not caught up with Arrow, I will edit in a time code here to say skip ahead to, because we need to vent about Arrow Season 4, especially this week's episode.
Yes.
This past week's episode. So I'm editing in the time code to skip ahead to now. All right, Smallville fans, if you don't want to get spoiled on Arrow, skip ahead to 22 minutes and 17 seconds. See you then. All right, if you're still listening, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Yep. We're all on board at this point.
So, Arrow, Season 4. Here's the deal with Arrow, right? Arrow Seasons 1 and 2 are great.
They're almost perfect.
Well, Arrow got off to a rough start.
Well, with us it did.
With us it did. We were ready to hate this show because being, you know, Lance and I were roommates at the time when Arrow started, so we watched the episodes every week. And we were ready to hate this show because they didn't get Justin Hartley and spin off Smallville into an Arrow show. I'm so mad about it. Retrospectively, it's good. They started fresh. But they reused so many things. They reused actors. They reused sets. They reuse locations, you know.
Mansion.
And I
understand. That was what really got us on the hate train at the very beginning was the Luther Mansion was the Queen Mansion.
Yeah, the establishing shots are all – they probably just reused the same stock footage they have from Smallville.
Probably.
Because it's that same – it's the X-Mansion as well from
–
But it's different when it's a Marvel movie and a CW TV show.
Yeah.
So Arrow really had a lot of hard work to do to win us over, and it totally did.
Yeah,
It had a little rough patches. It was Arrow. I think I figured out what the problem was. I was thinking about this. So the first three seasons of Arrow are the Dark Knight trilogy, okay? And they've run out of Dark Knight trilogy. So I think that's the problem. But the first two seasons are great. Yeah, there's some CW tropes. There are a couple love triangles, love interests, that kind of stuff.
But it's all forgiven though in the first two seasons.
Right. The first two at the end of season two, you're like, all right. I'm on board. I cannot wait for this excellent show to continue.
Yes.
And then we got season three, and I'll say this: I think the first half of season three is pretty good. They set up some mysteries. They did some things with some characters I wouldn't necessarily agree with, but at that point you're like, okay, they can still make something out of this. This is interesting. Uh-huh. But then they kill off Oliver Queen, and little did we know that was the theoretical death or spiritual death of Arrow. The symbolic death of the show.
Yeah,
it really was, because that was a great episode, and the reasoning for them to get there was a little questionable, but it was an awesome episode. I mean, they introduced Ra's al Ghul. They've been teasing him for a couple seasons. So they came back in season three, and then it just became the Felicity show. Felicity, everybody loved Felicity in the first two seasons because she was a great character. They had a balance. You know, Oliver was the driven crusader.
Yes.
Diggle was like the everyman, but you know, he was an honorable guy. Yeah, he was an honorable guy who was in the military. And then Felicity was your comic relief, and they had a nice balance, a triangle of personalities there.
Mm-hmm.
But then those dynamics all changed because they teased this Oliver and Felicity flirtation and relationship for like the first couple seasons. But it was just – it was harmless flirtation. It was like, okay, clearly they're in different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Felicity's always to ever want Oliver, but they both understood it was never going to work. Even if
she was kind of like she was Money Penny.
Yes, that's an excellent way to put it. It was like, yeah, we're going to flirt and we're going to, you know, there's some sparks here every now and then, but we understand that this
nothing's going to happen.
This would be illogical. This would be this would be silly. But they did it anyway because I don't know what's up with the writers and producers of this show. but
I don't know.
They just listened to the internet, I guess.
They did.
But a very vocal minority, I feel. Because, I mean, you can't talk about Felicity's growth on the show with talking about the shrinking of Laurel on the show.
Yes.
You know, because when Laurel, okay, once again, talking about the Dark Knight trilogy, and like I said, bear with us here. This is going to be a few minutes, then we'll get back to Smallville. But the Dark Knight trilogy, Laurel Lance is Katie Holmes, is what's her name?
Maggie Gyllenhaal.
No.
Rachel Dawes.
Rachel! How could I forget? Rachel! Rachel Dawes. Okay, so she's the district attorney, a childhood friend of the vigilante who they were friends from childhood, but they also kind of had romantic feelings for each other, which was never really established as what was going on with Batman Begins, right? But point is, she filled that role. And her name was Laurel Lance, and Dina was her middle name, or Dinah, however you pronounce it. I've heard it many ways. It's like Ra's al Ghul, right? There's many pronunciations.
No, there's one pronunciation.
Ra's al Ghul.
Ugh, garbage.
And she filled that role in the first season, and that was the weaker point, honestly. The Oliver, Laurel, Tommy, I mean, their mutual friend, Triangle. That was a weak point, I think, of season one, I feel.
Yeah.
But then, so Laurel was not working as a character, although she worked at a place called CNRI, right? Which is, oh, she's going to become the Black Canary, right? Because their logo was black, and that shows you what they were doing. So that was their plan, okay? So this is my big problem with Arrow. I keep there's so many problems now. But I guess, bottom line, Lance, I feel that they have no direction. They set things up, and they immediately change their mind. They contradict what they set up, and they refuse to, like, stay the course, right?
Mm-hmm.
And out of everything that annoys me, that is the biggest problem. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Because I'm gonna point out through the four seasons real quick why they've changed courses so many times, mainly around the Laurel character.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I was saying, season one, she works at CNRI. So that's going to be her inspiration to become the Black Canary. That's where that name would come from, right?
Yeah.
But as the season progressed, I think they realized the Laurel character's not working. And I don't know if it was the writers, I don't know. Something was not meshing.
Yeah.
So they start to plan, like, okay, let's do something else. They tease the fact that Sarah might still be alive, because Laurel has a sister, okay,
yes.
Sarah Lance, and she was with Oliver on the boat when they crashed, and, you know, that's a big tragedy. That's why Laurel and her father, Quentin Lance, hate Oliver, because they not only was he cheating on Laurel with their sister, Sarah,
died while with him.
Yeah, he got her killed, more or less. So, I mean, that's an interesting dynamic, you know. But that character, the Sarah character, should have been left dead, I think. Or at least that was the original plan. Would you not agree?
I agree.
Because they even had an episode in season one where they're like, oh, what if Sarah was still alive? And, you know, Laurel and her parents kind of go on a whole search for Sarah, and they ultimately find out, no, she's not. She's dead. We have to accept it, you know. Whenever there's a character who is dead, you always have that episode where it's like, what if they're not dead? And they established she was dead, and then they moved on. But then season two came along, and they're like, you know, I don't know, this Laurel character's not working. What if Sarah's still alive? And I loved Sarah as Black Canary. What were your thoughts on her, Lance?
Oh, I love Katie Lotz as Black Canary. She was a badass. Like, I don't know, she seemed to just really work well with everybody else that was on the team. Like, she was a good addition.
She really meshed with everybody, right?
She did. She had the best chemistry, I think.
So she was a great character in season two, but here's the struggle. Like, oh, well, we set up Laurel to be the Black Canary, but now we have Sarah and she's the Canary, and she is the Canary. She's an iconic Black Canary from the comic books. Is Sarah? Yeah, she was trained by the League of Assassins, which explains why she's so good. That's where she's been these 5 years. You know, she survived that boat crash and she got rescued by the League of Assassins, and then she's become, you know, this.
But
the woman version of Oliver, basically.
Yeah.
And they're a great match. And then they have flashbacks throughout season two where Sarah and Oliver did meet up on the island, which is such a huge retcon. Everybody's like, why didn't you tell us?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I mean, what was I going to say? She died again anyway, so.
Yeah.
I love Oliver just not telling people about stuff. It's like, you've had all this. Look, I can understand in the first season if he hadn't filled everyone in on the flashbacks, but it's like, look, man, you've had 4 years. Yeah.
Because they even bring that up in this season. He's like, I was like, I've seen this idol before. They're just like, really, guy? Really?
What was the point of keeping that to yourself? So we have this great character in Sarah, and the Laurel character, like, went on this alcoholic spiral and all this stuff, and she really, like, hit the desk because she had, her and Tommy had started a relationship, and Tommy had died at the end of season one. Oh, Arrow spoilers left and right here, guys, but, you know, whatever. Spoiler warning, right? I told you, if you're not caught up, we're going to spoil you. So season two ends, and Sarah goes back to join the League of Assassins. And she kind of gives Laurel her leather jacket, which is symbolic for, like, oh, you're going to be the next Black Canary. But I just never felt that that
never
was...
Bought it.
I never bought it. Like, I never felt that was the right decision. But season three starts, they kill off Sarah. You're like, whoa!
Mm-hmm.
You just killed off Sarah. Sarah's a great character, and they just killed her off. But it's very effective because you didn't expect it.
Yes.
And then the next episode, actually, called Sarah, is my favorite episode of the whole series of Arrow. I haven't revisited the early seasons recently, but... I just feel like that episode had everything at heart. It had action. It had, like, emotional consequence.
Yeah.
So, ironically, even though I'm complaining about post-season two Arrow, my favorite individual episode
is in season three.
The second episode of season three. So then season three, it goes on this whole other tangent about, you know, Oliver and Felicity start this relationship.
Sort of,
but then Ray Palmer shows up, and they have, like, this triangle, and Felicity ends up with Ray Palmer. But meanwhile, all this is going on. Laurel is training with
Ted Grant.
Black Panther? No, like what? No. With the Wildcat. Black Cat. Black Panther. Wildcat to become who I guess died in that undertaking season. They never really established.
They just family got it. Oh, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead. Look, I warned you guys with the tangents. So. Season three, Laurel kind of becomes the Black Canary because she feels frustrated with she can't get anywhere doing. And I get that.
She needs a way to channel her grief and all the things that's going on with her.
And plus, her job though, she's running all these. You know, she's a district attorney, you know.
Yeah. Like, assistant.
Oh yeah, like Rachel Dawes, right? She's an ADA. So she's running all these roadblocks about how the justice system isn't working, and she needs to work outside the law. So I get that motivation. Plus, honoring her sister, and she feels like. She's carrying on her legacy, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So she becomes Black Canary, and I get the motivation, but I still didn't buy it. But I will give Katie Cassidy credit. Like, she sold it. Like,
she did.
She put the time in at the gym, you know, to work out. Because Katie Lotz is, like, a martial artist.
She is.
So she's a legitimate, like stunt woman, and she can act, too. So that's a great – like, much like Steve DeMille does all the stunts, so does Katie Lotz. So mm-hmm. Katie Cassidy had a long way to catch up, and she really put in the work. So I give her credit there. I don't blame her for anything about Laurel not working. I just think the meshing of what they were trying to do and what she could do didn't really work in the first season or two.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I really was sold on the Black Canary story, at least in season three. I know they accelerated it some.
They did.
You know, like, okay, we got to get her out there on the streets doing stuff. But Oliver had disappeared and all this stuff. So that it all made sense. Like, she had to do that because Oliver was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was desperate times, call for desperate measures. So I actually, you know, it was fine. I bought it in the context of the show. But then season three continues, and they just focus so much on Felicity and Oliver. And it's like, look, guys, you've changed Felicity into a character that nobody likes anymore. Like, yeah. She's angry, she's crying, she's yelling at people. She's just a very upsetting person to be around. Poor Ray Palmer.
Yeah, I know. And she was just so short, and she just makes all these really curt remarks to people. It's just like, and nobody calls her on it. When in the past two seasons, like, everybody called each other on everything.
Exactly. Like,
so it was disappointing to see that.
Yeah. So the people wanted more Felicity, so they gave us more Felicity, but they didn't give us more of the Felicity we wanted. They made her this different character, and then through a series of unfortunate events, she ends up inheriting Palmer Tech from Ray Palmer. Ray Palmer has taken over Queen Consolidated. And then he disappears, and so Felicity takes over Palmer Tech. But then at the end of the season, Oliver and Felicity run off together. He pulls a Dark Knight Rises. See, that's what I'm saying. It's the end of the trilogy. So
and they run off and literally ride into the sunset.
Literally ride into the sunset.
To the point where, like, the producer of the show has to make a commercial. Was like, they'll be back in season four. Just like,
yeah, you're like, what? Did I just watch the series finale of Arrow?
Yeah.
Because they kill off the Arrow, you know, in theory. Look, we're not getting into it here. Well, this is a Smallville podcast, okay? But the point, what we're getting at here is they've continually shifted, like, what their approach was. Like, it was going to be, Laurel's going to be Black Canary. Oh, now Sarah's Black Canary. Oh, no. Now let's kill Sarah off so Laurel can become the Black Canary.
Yeah.
You know? So we start season four. Laurel's Black Canary. She's a normal part of the team. They finally perfected her makeup so she doesn't look ridiculous. Because, mm-hmm. I think, you know, all the black, like, lipstick and the white wig and all that was not working. So I really like Laurel's season four Black Canary look. But here's the deal. season four has also been about Oliver and Felicity. And they teased his death at the end of the season premiere, and it was Oliver at this grave, and everybody was like, who is it? Who could it be? And people were like, well, it's probably Detective Lance. And like, okay, it probably is. Like, that would be lame, like, so expected, but it's like, okay, he's gone through so many character arcs, right? Like, yeah. He's kind of spent as a character. There's not much else you can do with him. Because surely you can't kill Laurel because she's the Black Canary.
Yep.
And you already killed one of the Black Canaries.
Yep.
You're not going to kill the other one. And then everybody thought, oh, maybe it's Felicity, right? They're like, oh, good. That would be awesome if they do on a Honor Her Majesty's Secret Service deal with Oliver, right?
Where, yeah.
Like, because he gets engaged to Felicity, and you're like, okay, this is it. They're going to get he's going to get engaged. There's going to be at their wedding. And then Damian Dark, who's been a great bad guy, by the way, this season on Arrow. He's going to kill Felicity, and that's going to drive him on some quest for revenge. It's going to be great. So they had this – so what's even more insulting to us as the audience, they had this whole fake-out, like the mid-season finale where Felicity gets shot.
Yep.
And Oliver and her get ambushed by Damian Dark's people. And you think, oh, could this be it? Is she the body in the grave? But people forgot. They're like, no, that's 6 months in the future. So we're not there yet, you know. So yep. she's paralyzed for what, like 3 episodes, 4 episodes max.
Yeah, it seems like 30 minutes. Really.
And then Mr. Terrific, who's come on the show, Curtis Salt, who is a good character. I like him. On the he's one of the few great things about season 4 of Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
He invents some shit to make her walk. Okay, but meanwhile, Damian Dark reveals to Felicity that Oliver had this kid that he didn't know about, that we know about since season 2. So she gets all mad about him keeping secrets and stuff, and calls off the engagement. And it's just full on Felicity we don't like. And then they have this fake marriage, and
it was terrible.
It's just complete fan pandering. And then they bring on her mom as like a semi regular character now, and it's like, my gosh, why are we focusing so much time on this tertiary character? Someone who was not even meant to be part of the cast. Like I'm saying? Like she was a guest star for one episode. And then they just and they liked her so much, they added her and added her and added her to episodes, and that's fine. But why she's not the character that you sold us on, you know? And now she's and that's the biggest problem. I've said this is the biggest problem, right? Like 5 times, right?
Yes, you have.
But now they've killed off Laurel. They've cut her character arc short because clearly she'd gone through one of the most radical transformations of anyone on the show, and they actually kind of sold me on it. So good for them. Yeah. And the irony is, had they killed off Laurel at the end of season 2, I'd been like, okay, good. Now Sarah's the Black Canary.
Yeah,
you know, we have Felicity around, so everything's fine. But now I've completely turned the tables. Like, oh, we've killed off Laurel in season 4. Oh, great. Now Sarah's off on Legends of Tomorrow, and Felicity's the only, you know, female character here other than Thea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wow, you just completely pandered to the Felicity fan base because she's the only one left. You know, and that's why, like, if Felicity didn't exist, I would have disagreed with him killing off Laurel. But like, wow, that's a ballsy move. You know, I didn't expect that, right? But we know the only reason they did that is so they can get Oliver and Felicity together, and no one can complain about it.
I know, and especially the way that they did it in the show. They were just like, you know, she was – because, like, what she says in her dying breaths are like, you know, I'm glad you found Felicity, and it's just like, ugh. So now, like, he can be with her without, like, any remorse or anything. And they're probably going to use that as the two of them, like, getting back together because they're going to bond over grieving for her.
Oh, because life is so short, and, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just very, very – thank you for listening to us on this, guys, if you didn't skip ahead. I'm just very upset with Arrow right now.
Yep.
And I'm going to see it through to the 5th season, but then I'm going to stop
because
this is a 5-year show. And if they try to push it past 5 seasons – first of all, they don't have anything else to do. Like I said, they ran out of the Dark Knight trilogy, so I don't know what else they could possibly do at this point. I mean, how many – what new terrorist organization is going to come attack Star City?
Who knows, man?
But I'm just saying, look, and I'll leave you with this. If they make Felicity the Black Canary, I'll stop sooner.
Yeah, if she suits up and becomes a hero, that's it.
One final course correction thing they've done with this show is they took Oliver off the island, right?
Yeah.
Which they had to do because they established he knew how to like fly a plane, use a computer, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this another thing they established this last week is he had a scene with his love interest of the year on the island, right?
Yep.
And she's like, all right, if I don't make it out of this, go to Russia and tell my family what happened to me. And if you don't make it out of this, I'll go to America and tell Laurel that you're a good man or something. Which is the same conversation you have with Sarah in season 2, right? Like, okay, hey, if we don't make it off the boat, if they don't make it off the freighter, tell everybody I died on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a lot of inside baseball here for Arrow, but I assume if you like Smallville, you've been watching Arrows.
Yep.
But it's like, wow, you're recycling that same plot. So you're going to tell me, Arrow, that Oliver, he was on Leon Yu, he left for a year, he came back for a year, he left, he went to Russia, and then he came back again?
Yeah, it's so weird. He should have been in Russia earlier, way earlier.
Well, we should have just skipped China. Skipped China. We didn't. China was such a waste of a year. Such a waste.
Yep.
And what, is he not getting a haircut now? How's his hair going to get to the point? Don't tell me I'm nitpicking. When the producers themselves said the first scene of Arrow is the last scene of Arrow, which I thought was a cool circular storytelling, right? So he should never got a haircut either, because that's the whole point. Like, how is he going to turn like the caveman Oliver if he's in Russia next year? And then what's he going to go back to the island just to get picked up? Like, oh, my God, is that what they're going to do? Like, he's on Russia the whole time. He's like, okay, I don't want people to know I was anywhere else. Let me go back to the island and then set off this fire, right? And that completely defeats the purpose of, like, the savage primal Oliver Queen we met, who had to survive in the wild and stuff like that.
Yeah, because Oliver's totally not hardcore anymore.
Well, yeah, this show isn't hardcore anymore. It's all about love and romance. And, you know, I guess we've ranted too long about Arrow, but I feel better. I guess. I mean, I don't feel better at Arrow, but I feel glad I got to vent about my frustrations. And that, why else have a podcast, right? That's what these things are for. So anyway, guys, if you do like Arrow and you want to hear more about it, I recommend listening to A Quiver, the Green Arrow podcast.
Yes.
It's a good show. Great. Mike and Amanda are the hosts, and they actually live in Canada, so they have a lot of insight on the production of Arrow, and because they produce Arrow up there. It's like, oh, I drove by the city hall the other day. Stuff like that. So if you do like Arrow, I check them out. I recommend them. And this is our mini version of that, just venting about how – because season 4 actually started out pretty good too, much like season 3. But it's just all – they just cannot stick the landing, can they?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, so it was on to Smallville.
Woo!
The watch I lost? My mom gave it to me when she knew it was getting close. She found a Napoleon franc from 1806 and had it made into the face.
Why Napoleon?
You ever see the painting of Napoleon's coronation by David?
No.
Napoleon's mother couldn't make it to his coronation. But when he commissioned it, Napoleon told David to paint her in as if she were there, right in the center. Even though she couldn't be there physically, he brought her into his life through sheer force of will. There to share in his greatness.
Shimmer is the 10th episode of Smallville's 10th season. My God. There is a 10th season, though. I'm going to leave that in. Shimmer is the 10th episode of Smallville's first season. It was originally aired on January 29th, 2002. It was written by Mark Verheiden and Michael Green and directed by DJ Caruso. Now, DJ Caruso, I must say, is kind of a legit director. Well, legit, I don't know how you define legit, but Lance, I'll tell you some of the movies he's directed, and you tell me if he's legit.
Okay.
Eagle Eye, Disturbia. So apparently he's good friends with Shia LaBeouf. I Am Number 4.
Oh, God.
G.I. Joe 3, he's rumored to direct.
Oh, my God.
And he's currently filming XXX3, The Return of Xander Cage.
Oh, my gosh.
Things I gotta do for my country.
I love that line. That's one of the best trailer lines ever.
Vin Diesel, man.
That was like him at the height of his popularity.
Yeah, that was early 2000s Vin Diesel, XXX. It was
like that, and then like he had another great line in Chronicles of Riddick, and like the female protagonist, you know, the love interest or whatever, comes up to him, and he looks at her, and he's like, "It's been a long time since I smelled beautiful." It's just like, it's such a bad line that can be interpreted in many different ways. It was so funny.
Vin Diesel, the master of the trailer one-liner.
Yep.
So that's DJ Caruso. This is the only episode of Smallville he directed until obviously he moved on to bigger and better things. So this episode, we start out with, it's the blood drive at Smallville. And
yep.
Apparently freshman Lana Lang.
Is in charge.
Is in charge of the blood drive at high school. And so Lance, have you ever donated blood to a blood drive?
Yeah, I did once.
I used to do this at my old job at a television station. They used to come to the TV station and take your blood. I'm like, oh, well, that's convenient. I'm here anyway. You know, they're downstairs. Let me just go down there and get some blood. That's fine. But the deal with that is, I don't work there anymore, so I don't really get blood anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't leave me alone. Like,
yeah, they never do.
They keep calling, and like, so I don't block their number, but I put their number in my phone so I know, okay, this is them. I'm not gonna answer it, right? But they have like they changed their number. Like, it's like fighting the Borg and changing their phaser frequency, yeah. You know? So they're trying to get through the shields, right? But it's
any means possible.
Nerdy analogy. But it's annoying. The Gulf Coast, listen, the Gulf Coast Regional Blood Center, leave me alone, all right? I give my time. I gave my blood. If there's some kind of emergency or crisis, I will go get my blood again. But don't call me every other week. They literally call me every other week, and it's really annoying. But anyway, all that being said, well, did we ever have blood drives at high school?
No, we didn't.
Because you have to get like parent permission.
You have to have parent permission slip to. You have to have parent permission to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty invasive medical thing they're doing, but it does actually at least tie together on what the resolution of the episode was. So I can kind of see why they did this way. And it's a whole and this episode, bottom line, it's not about anything else but Clark and Lana's relationship.
Oh well, it's about that, and I'll argue it's also about Chloe as well.
Right, they do start watering those seeds of her liking Clark, for sure. There's some longing looks from Alice and Max, so mm-hmm. good for her. But we meet two of our characters here, Amy and Jeff. They are brother and sister, and they work for the Luthers. And it makes sense that the Luther Mansion would have like a help staff.
Yes.
And so it's established that their parents work for Lex, and they all live on the property, Luther Mansion. And so Amy is just sitting there doodling some journal, and then this bully, Troy... Which is like, oh, that bully name number three from high school.
Yeah.
His name is Troy. And he comes by, he snatches her journal, and apparently she's been writing love letters to
Lex.
Lex.
Well, I like her. She's like, because of boys like you, girls want real men like Lex. She does say that. I was like, ooh, put down high school style.
Yeah, she's like, it's because of boys like you, the girls want men like Lex. they're all wearing their gym clothes here, which is funny.
Yeah. Because like they're all outside at gym. Clark is sitting there walking with Lana, trying to get his time in, right? And then Pete's just like, "Come on, Clark, try to hit the showers." It's like, really, dude? Like,
yeah, you see what I'm doing here, bro? Like, you better than anyone should know. Like, don't cramp my style.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is funny to see these guys in gym uniforms. Because I mean, I never we had.
Yeah, we didn't take gym in high school.
Yeah, being in high school, we didn't have gym. We had gym in middle school. We had those goofy uniforms, but we were all in marching band. So thank you, band.
Yeah, PE credit.
So they go in to take the shower, to go to the locker room, and then we get some shirtless Pete and Clark action for all the ladies out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure they appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Clark kind of gets a little fatigued, and Pete's like, "You all right, Clark?" He's like, yeah, I'm all right. So it seems like a hint of kryptonite is around somewhere.
Yeah.
Which doesn't come back around till later in the episode. And you're like, what's this about? Because this is the only time a freak of the week affected Clark that way other than Earl back in Jitters, who literally had kryptonite in his system. So we see Troy, and he's like, he took a shower, he's changing. But then his shoe flies up and hits him.
Yep.
And then some barbells, some free weights come out and hit him, and he's getting beat up by this invisible force. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but I actually think they did a pretty good job with all this invisible stuff. Like, if you're not careful, it looks ridiculous, right?
Yes.
But I felt like it was okay. What about you?
I thought it was okay. What it reminded me of, and I wanted to talk about this on the podcast, was Hollow Man.
Yes. Right. I said that, especially when he walks into the steam.
Yes. And then, of course, like, the only thing I remember about Hollow Man is the Superman joke.
Oh, God. You all, listen, we're not going to repeat it here because this is a family podcast. But you've all heard the Superman joke about Superman flying around and an invisible man. Look it up online, all right? Do your internet due diligence. But yeah, Hollow Man, yeah, because that came out like in 2000-ish,
yeah.
So it was fresh on the mind. So I wonder if that was like the inspiration for this episode. Like, what if we did an episode like Hollow Man? Because there are lots of shots of like his outline walking around in like fog or smoke or steam or whatever. And that, they were taking some seriously hot showers in there to generate that much steam, am I right?
No joke.
But that was a pretty effective cold open because we don't know what happened. And then we see whoever it may be
mm-hmm.
walk into the steam of the 150-degree showers.
Yep.
So then we go to the opening credits and we come back and they're at the Beanery, right, as they always are.
We've
seen the Beanery more in this episode than any other one.
I had completely forgotten about the Beanery. It was just like, so what happened to it? Like, did it just, like, go out of business?
If I recall, after Lana opened the town, and like there was some dialogue about how the Beanery was trying to like badmouth them, and there was some back and forth. We'll get to it in a few episodes here, but I do recall they mentioned something about like, you know, because it's competition, right? So there was something
because
about
it's a small town. So if you have two coffee shops, like one is not going to do as well as the other.
Yeah, we're not in Houston where you literally have three Starbucks on, and within a city block.
Three Starbucks and an It's a Grind and all other sorts of things.
Absolutely, those still exist.
No, It's a Grind's gone, man.
Yeah, it's some Thai place, right?
Yep.
What a shame! What a shame for the 7 of you out there who know what that is. What a shame. so. Where better, you know, Whitney and Lana are getting an argument here, and where better to have an argument than in the
middle of a public place?
It's like, could you not have waited in the car? Could you not? Those are the worst, to have an argument with a significant other in a public place. You know, I mean, you gotta just wait in the car. You gotta hold it together till you get home. Like there's people, especially in a small town. People are gonna see. They know who you are. They know what you're talking about. You know, so Chloe and Clark are sitting there having their morning Joe or whatever.
Yeah, which Chloe looks really good, by the way, in this episode.
I did notice that as well.
She's on point, so which is interesting to notice, because when we get to late season two or season three, it's not going to be that much.
Yeah. Well, she was having a tough time. The character of Chloe.
She was.
That is. So Juana. that's the shipper name for Lana and Whitney. Juana. Juana is having an argument about him not helping her with the blood drive. He's like, well, I don't want to talk about it. Okay, I just need some space. And Lana's like, well, if you can't even trust me, I don't even know why we're dating. And she walks off. And she comes up to Clark and Chloe. I laugh at them, like, oh, let's pretend that we weren't paying attention. And
like, hey, Lana, what's up?
I liked her line here. She says, thanks for the courtesy, Clueless.
See, Clueless, yeah.
I'm going to use that. That's a good line. So, you know, they're talking about the blood drive, and Lana's signing people up, and she signs Chloe up, and she's like, Clark, we haven't signed you up yet. And he's like, oh, I'll get back to you. So that's interesting. I actually like that. This is one of those things about practically being Superman in the real world. Like, think issues like this are going to come up. And I like this comes up in this episode. Like, he has a scene, Clark and the kids talk about it. After this, and he's like, oh, I don't know what to do. Lana's in charge of the blood drive, and I don't want to look like a wuss. And Martha says, well, just tell her you have a problem with needles, which technically is the truth.
Yeah.
you know, Jonathan tells him, like, look, Clark, I can't believe I'm telling you this, but you're just not going to be able to be honest with people all the time.
So because of your abilities.
Yeah, that's a good thing, because the Kents, you know, they're like salt of the earth people, as a phrase I think they really overuse in this show. I think that's why it just came to my mind right now. But, you know, they're really honest people, and that's the irony of Clark Kent, you know, is he lies to people every day of his life. Yes. So even for silly things like a blood drive, he's got to come up with weird excuses. So anyway, we get back to the Luther Mansion. As you may recall from our last episode, Victoria Hardwick, played by Kelly Brook, British TV personality Kelly Brook, apparently, is now living at the mansion. She's going to stay there for a while.
Yep.
And Amy... comes into who we've never seen before, but we've never seen these people.
Never.
But look, it's season one, so I'm gonna like not complain too much about it, right? Theoretically, these people could be doing their thing, right? So Amy comes in to like give Lex his morning whatever tea or whatever it was, and he's like, Amy, this is Victoria. She's gonna be staying with us for a while. So then Amy just like spills her tray all over Victoria. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she just,
and I like how Victoria knows that she did it on purpose.
She's calling her out. She's like, you spilled that on me on purpose.
Yeah.
And Lex says, oh, no, she didn't. It was just an accident, right, Amy? And Amy's like, sure. And she walks off. But I like that this episode, you know, Lex has to deal with some weird stuff in this episode, and he handles it very well, very maturely. You know, he's not like he's not like a tyrant or anything like his father.
Yeah, and he doesn't fly off the rails. I will say that I think that we would have, like, if the Amy character was introduced earlier, we didn't need to, like, get to know her or anything, but we needed to at least see her around the mansion when Clark was there. Like, you know, just, like, around. I think for this episode to, like, I guess mean more.
I wish they would have planned it out and just like, oh, we're going to have this episode two episodes down the road. Let's get an actress and we'll have her in one scene. Just one scene, right?
Yeah.
Which is what we always talk about with the Freak of the Weeks. Like, oh, hey, Trevor, you've been in our class for the last 3 years.
yeah, exactly. It makes it less awkward.
Yeah. We'd also get a little scene here when Amy goes back to her room, and it's established that, well, she has a watch that she puts on. It hasn't been established yet in the episode, but it's pretty clear to us that that's Lex's watch she just stole.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, because it's just like, when did she rip this watch was my thing.
Right, because Lex acts like he just lost it, but maybe he just decided to wear it that day, and he just realized it was gone. But, you know, and just to jump ahead for a minute, like this whole subplot of this watch is something that his mom had given him before she had died. And that's why it has a great significance to Lex. Clark comes in to deliver some tulips, right, to Lex, and they're Victoria's favorite. And then the minute Lex says that,
like as soon as he says the word Victoria, boom,
box of tulips just flies out everywhere, and they're like, "Whoa, did you just see that?" And so Clark goes to go check the watch. Oh, that's what it is. They're looking for the watch. Yeah, they are looking for the watch right now. This scene, right? And
because he comes in and Lex is, you know, he's looking through the couch and stuff.
And they do that really lame misdirect of like this point of view camera, like, oh, the invisible man's gonna get Lex, but it's just Clark. Yep. So I mean, fine, but needless misdirect there. So he's looking for this watch, and I like how Clark does a quick scan of the room with his X-ray vision. And he's like, oh, I don't see it anywhere. It's like, what, are you part bloodhound? And Clark is quick. He's like, no, but I grew up on a farm. We're good at finding needles in haystacks. Like, oh, good job, Clark. Good job. File that away, Lex, in your Clark is weird folder.
Yep.
Clark has gone in this room to talk to Lex, and we assume it's the same room we always see at Luther Mansion, like the main room with the fireplace and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Clark goes to, like, all right, well, I'm going to go check the library. And then he goes to the library, and it's the same room, right? I mean, it's the same.
It just has a computer in it.
It's the same set, and they tried to act like it was two different rooms, because it's like, wait, that's Lex's desk with his Mac on it that he's always on, you know? And I'm like, come on, show. Like, you couldn't, like, it was just so, with a set like the Luther Mansion, it's just so obvious, like, very lame redress. Like, they could have just put Victoria in another room entirely, like nothing like that. But I just thought it was so cheap to be like, oh, let me go check the other room. It looks just like that room. Now, I've never had a mansion, so maybe that's how mansions work. Maybe all the rooms look very similar. But, yeah, that was kind of lame. So he sees Victoria on the computer.
We see Cadmus.
Yeah, we see Cadmus Labs, which plays a role in, obviously, the greater Superman mythology. So we're not sure what's going on there. But Cadmus, I like the shout-out, and they do follow up on Cadmus Labs a couple episodes down the road here. And then actually in season 10, right? Isn't that where they clone Lex? Yeah. Hey, Cadmus? Uh-huh. Wow. But if not for Victoria's really guilty look on her face, Clark would have never known she was, like, hacking Alexa's computer, right? When you immediately, like, look guilty, you know, like, the only thing she could have done worse was, like, slam the laptop down.
Uh-huh.
But if she'd just been on the computer going about her business, it wouldn't have been suspicious at all, right?
Yeah, and just kind of looked up and was like, oh, hey, Clark.
Yeah, well, hey, what's going on? You know, well, wait, she's not as good at lying as Lex or Clark are.
Oh, no.
So they hear this, like, bunch of noise come from upstairs. And so they all, Lex and Clark and Victoria, all go upstairs, I guess, to the master bedroom or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
But they go in there, and they go upstairs, and they approach the door, and, like, there's this glowing light, and the door is shaking. Because at this point, people are thinking, like, is this a ghost? Because that seems to be the theory people have. So Lex goes up to the door, he starts to turn the knob, and then the door flies open. And I love how he just kind of, like, collapses back into Clark's arms, like a complete wuss. And they go in there, and, like, there's black light everywhere.
Leave now.
Yeah, all this paint. And then there's, like, there's something in the air, like glitter or dust or something flying around. And it's like, okay, spoiler here, right? It's not a ghost, it's an invisible man.
Uh-huh.
And the invisible man is Jeff, Amy's younger brother. I guess he's his younger brother. Maybe he's his older brother. I don't know.
Maybe. He looks, by the way, the actor that plays him looks a lot like Johnny Young Bosch did in Power Rangers, which is really weird because that's the first thing I thought. I was like, surely that's not him.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought up the actors here. This actor is Ket Turton, and he recently played Sand Demon on The Flash Season 2. Flash 2 Worlds, yeah. So, because I knew that guy looked familiar.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, because I had to look up Amy. Because I knew she looked familiar, and she was on a WB show with Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah, Zoe Duncan Jack and Jane
with Selma Blair.
And they played twins.
They did.
So this is like a reunion for Michael Rosenbaum and her.
Yep.
Azura Sky is her name, and I really want to check out this show now. So he took in Jack and Jane. I remember seeing commercials for this back in the day on WB.
I did too.
But I never watched it. But I'm very interested to see Micah Rosenbaum and other things. So especially something pre Smallville. So it's funny that they reunited the actors that way. It's kind of like a Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane. The vibe I get from it, like from what I've seen from it, it's like a precursor to What About Brian?
Yes,
one of our other favorite shows, right?
Yeah,
that's the next podcast. Always hold on to What About Brian? So yeah, so Jeff is the Invisible Man here. What is he doing here? Like, what?
I don't know.
How did he accomplish all this? Right, he's not a ghost. So
yeah,
I mean, he was in there and he had like a big light up against the door and was like shaking it.
Yeah, I guess.
It's just over the top. Like, I feel like they didn't need to keep stretching the whole, like, oh, maybe it's a ghost. Like, the episode implies it's Amy the whole time.
It does. You know? And also, like, what other, like, he's supposed to, like, he has the power to become invisible, but, like, did he get super strength also and speed and, like...
Well, I think that is why they had Clark get a little weak earlier, because another, you know, just to get ahead of it here, it's revealed that in a very lame, half-assed way... It's revealed that the way Jeff is turning invisible is he found a green rose on the ground.
Yeah.
And he studied it in chemistry, and he made a gel that make him invisible. So he rubs it all over his body, and it's implied that he's always naked when he's doing this stuff too.
Yeah.
Which is really like just ew.
Yeah.
So we got this naked guy running around covered in like flower goo doing all this stuff. Anyway, this is a very over the top, unnecessary gesture on Jess because he's trying to get rid of Victoria because he can tell that it's bothering his sister Amy, that the Lex has a girlfriend. You know, oh God forbid, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, and you know, one other thing I did want to say here about this whole scene at Lex's house is Clark and Lex kind of have a conversation about Victoria.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Lex tells Clark, Clark's like, so what's up with you guys? And Lex tells Clark, relationships aren't always about love, Clark. Sometimes they're about mutual goals.
Yeah.
Not every girl is Lana Lang. So.
And I do like, he also says, he's like, but I admire your standards though, Clark.
Yeah. He's like, don't keep that. You know, don't lose those. And that's just great. Like, I feel like even though.
They had some honest conversations in this episode. There's some actual honesty and there's some boldness on the part of some characters with what they were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Well,
which
then,
I appreciated.
Especially just for just Lex's, you know, just his mindset, you know, towards things, his worldview towards things. And that's something that, you know, even though, yes, he becomes more Lex Luthor as the series progresses, like as far as like what he does, like his actions, like his scientific experiments and all, you know, all the government contracts and things of that nature. I feel like as a character, like he was more Lex Luthor back then because he had more interesting layered motivations. Like later on, it was like, I love Lana. I don't like Clark because he lied to me. Like those are his two character motivations in the later seasons. And here, I mean, he's like playing business angles. He's playing relationship angles. Like he's really manipulating things. And that's what Lex Luthor is, if not a master manipulator.
Yeah.
As we saw in Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Now. So next day, Lionel comes and pays Lex a visit. Always great to see John Glover on the show.
Yeah.
He only has this one scene here. So I mean,
of course it's a good one. Like, and I loved everything he did. And I loved the emphasis that he puts on hard in her name.
Yeah. Hardwick.
Yeah, that was funny.
And they had this great back and forth as they always do. Lionel tells him Smallville is your test, and right now you're failing. and then something else he says. Basically, anything Lionel says is a quotable. Right?
Yeah,
anything Lionel says is a quotable. I think it might be his final line here. He says to Lex is, "If you sell out your family, then you will truly be alone in the world."
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's
great line.
That's Lex's greatest fear, too.
Yeah.
You know, to be alone. So Lionel really, he understands his son and he's using his fears against him. So that was a great, just so good. Like all the Luthor scenes, everybody steps
their
game
up. Every Luthor scene is great.
The acting, the writing, it's all ace. So then we get to Lana and Clark, and Clark has volunteered to help her with the blood drive because Whitney is persona non grata, right?
Uh-huh.
I think that's how you use that term. And they're sitting on her porch and they're doing this, they're doing that, and they finish up the blood drive. Clark tells Lana, it's amazing you do all these different things. Like, he's just sucking up, right?
Yeah. Oh, man. So, he is trying his hardest.
Well, as he told Lex, he's like, I've decided to fight for Lana. Because, I mean, he sees Whitney's kind of drifting, and he sees an opportunity here. Yeah. He sees an opening. Superman, folks. But no, but this episode addresses that pretty well, and I give it credit, and we'll get into that. You know, we get a mention here of how Jonathan used to date Nell. Did you notice that? Like, I remember when we did the pilot, we were like, where did this come from? Like, what's Nell's attitude towards Martha? This is so weird. Yeah. And they actually remembered that, and they brought that back around here. And it's mentioned that Jonathan and Nell used to date. And Clark's like, you think it's kind of weird? And Lana says, Nell doesn't like to talk about it very much, so she's still bitter about that.
Well, yeah, speaking of not liking to talk about it, I love Clark when he's just like, if you want to thank me, he's like, don't talk to me about Whitney. Yeah. I was like, dang!
He's not just being the pushover friend zone guy anymore. He's sensing that he can pull this thing off, so he's being a little more forward.
Yeah.
And he's really putting the moves on Lana.
He really is.
And they almost kiss, and then Nell comes out and ruins the moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they also, like, and Lana, like, drops some, like, gospel lyrics on Clark also. She's like, Clark's not always there when you want him, but he's there when you need him. It's just like, really?
And then, so they're kind of awkwardly trying to say goodbye now because Nell has come and broken up the love fest out here.
Yep.
And Clark's like, have you ever seen the sunset from my loft? And she says, yes.
It just took her off guard.
And Clark's like, and you can tell that he doesn't know how to follow that up. But she realizes she messed up, and she's like, oh, well, you know, sunsets are different all the time. And sure, yeah, I'd love to see it again. And Clark's like, okay, well, why don't you come over tomorrow night? This is very important, everyone. Remember, Clark says, why don't you come over tomorrow night? And Lana says, great, love it. I'll see you then. So then the next day, he's telling Pete about this at school, right? And Pete's like, oh, man, my boy.
Yeah, I love it. Pete, the hype man, I love it.
Pete is, you know, he's so Julio from The Flash, the original Flash.
Yes.
Because Barry Allen's best friend is Julio, the guy he works with on the 1990 Flash, John Wesley Shipp. And yep. Julio's sole purpose on that show was to influence Barry Allen's love life.
He was his hype man. He was Bundini Brown to Muhammad Ali. Like, that's exactly what he was.
And so I love how they just decided that's Pete here. And Pete's like, oh, man, I'm going to write some lines for you later. Because he's like, have you ever seen the sunset from my loft? Did you actually say that?
Clark was like, well, like, I think I'm just going to, you know, just kind of like, you know, what do you say?
Fly by the seat of fly my by the pants. Seat.
Yeah. He's like, but you're not the flying type, Clark.
Oh, it's because he's Superman. Yeah, we get it. We get it, show. So Clark overhears the counselor talking to Whitney at his locker down the hallway because he's like, oh, your mom called. I understand. So Clark starts to get a hint that, you know, something's going on in Whitney's personal life here. So Whitney just kind of, I mean, he's kind of flustered and he's not himself. And throughout this whole episode, really. And mm-hmm. he drops all his stuff, and Clark goes over to help him, which is – this probably wasn't intentional, but I thought it was kind of a callback to the pilot where Clark drops all his stuff, you know. And unlike Whitney being sarcastic to him, Clark actually helps him out, picks up this medicine bag, and Whitney's like, give me that, and he walks off. Clark's like, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
And then, you know, in a invasion of privacy, Superman is prone to do, he x-rays Whitney's backpack, and he sees – the medicine that's inside his backpack is actually for Whitney's dad. It's some kind of heart medicine or something.
Mm-hmm.
Clark's at the beanery again. He's at the beanery again. And he's reading a printout of, like, what this medicine is because he'd obviously gone and researched it.
Yeah.
And this shows you this shows you where this show is, right? Like, this is back in the day where you would find something online, you would print it out, and you would read it somewhere else. You know why? Because you had to pay by the minute to use the internet.
That's correct.
Back then, so you're like, oh, let's print it out. Hurry, sign off. I got to use the phone, okay? Mm-hmm. I can't be on Wikipedia all day. So he's reading about this medicine. And we have a short scene, but a good scene here between Clark and Amy.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like this scene, we're joking about the beanery. I feel like the scene totally could have been at school.
It could have.
But I guess they just wanted to change the scenery, so to speak. But Amy comes by and talks to Clark, and it's a huge misdirect about her being the invisible person or the invisible woman here. Because she's like, oh, I saw Victoria going through all Lex's things. And Clark's like, how did you see that? She didn't see you? She's like, no, she didn't see me. It's just so blatant, right?
Yeah.
But you get a little bit of insight into Amy here. She's like, Lex is the only one who treated me like I was there and that kind of thing. So even though she feels invisible, you know, that's how she feels as a person because her family are like the, you know, the help.
The help.
The help. And, you know, but her brother literally is invisible. So that's the division there. And you know, it explains her crush, too, because, you know, Lex is this powerful man who's nice to her, doesn't treat her like garbage. So I get it. So then we get to Luther Mansion that night, and Victoria's, you know, having a bath. and I swear they use the same exact scene, like, many more times on this show.
They do.
I know for a fact, like, Chloe and Lana, when they're taking, like, a bath, like, in...
And Lois.
And Lois. Is it Lois, too? I figured it was Lois, too. But, yeah. Like, you know, in the Talon, right? It's the same. It's, like, the bathtub, someone uh-huh. there. Like, I know it's, like, a horror movie trope, but, like, it was so similar to those later times they did this on Smallville. So, Clark comes over to Lex's, I guess, to... because the conversation with Amy kind of set off a light bulb in his head.
Yeah.
About stuff. And... they have this conversation about the watch because Lex is still looking for the watch. And this is a great conversation here.
It is.
Between Lex and Clark, because Lex basically tells Clark that his mom gave it to him before he died, and it's a coin. It's a French coin with Napoleon's face on it. Mm. And the reason this has significance to both of them is that Napoleon – there's a painting of Napoleon's coronation. And
it's a famous painting, too.
Yes. Yeah, this is unlike Alexander the Great's breastplate from the last episode. This is a real thing. And Napoleon instructed the artist to include Napoleon's mother in the painting, even though his mother could not physically be there because she was ill or something of that nature.
Yeah.
And it's Napoleon, like, making his mother a part of his life through the sheer force of his will.
Yeah.
And that's what Lex is doing, you know. And that just shows you, like, these are the people that Lex idolizes and bases his life upon. And that's I find that very interesting.
Well, yeah, people
stuff.
Who conquered the world before they were 30.
Yeah, exactly. But moving on, Victoria's getting murdered upstairs.
Yep. Hollow Man style.
Yes, the Hollow Man style. Come on, that movie came out just a year before this, guys. Kevin Bacon, what happened to him? He's in everything.
He was Sebastian Shaw.
He was. Yeah, that's like his best role in the last 20 years.
Yep.
Is in X-Men First Class. What happened to Kevin Bacon? Like, oh, man. Stir of Echoes came out the same year as The Sixth Sense, and The Sixth Sense just blew it away, and Kevin Bacon never recovered. So Clark runs upstairs and saves Victoria, who's getting drowned, and then he gets, like, pushed into this mirror, which shatters everywhere, and then Clark finally decides to use his X-ray vision to see what's going on. He sees, like, a skeleton getting out of the door,
yep.
So that confirms to him, look, this isn't a ghost or poltergeist or whatever, it's an actual person, because they have a skeleton.
And they stepped on glass.
Well, but the setup was the mirror broke. You know,
yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that they set that up. So, and you're like, why would that cut his foot? Because he's naked. Because he's running around naked.
Yep.
Jeff steps on the glass trying to get out the door. So Clark saves that piece of glass or piece of mirror or whatever, and brings it to Chloe the next day. Now, let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
What day of the week is it? Not quite what day of the week is it, but you guys lost track of days here.
Yeah.
Because... as we established, Clark and Lana were going to meet the next night to see the sunset at his loft. This
yep.
is the next day because they went to school. Clark went to the coffee shop. Clark went to Lex's. It's night now. It's the next day.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So what? Like, I don't know if this is a problem in the editing or the writing, because they actually this episode they edited a lot in post, and they actually refilmed some scenes to kind of make it. They shifted the focus more towards Clark and Lana and less on the Freak of the Week story, which I think was a smart move.
Agreed.
This is one of the more questionable Freak of the Week stories. But I think something got lost there when they were reshuffling the episode, because it really should have been, you know, the next day.
Well, yeah, like, you got to pay attention to what you've established in the episode.
I just think it's very basic storytelling. It's not that hard to screw up if you're paying attention to what you're writing.
Agreed.
But anyway, now it finally is the next day, and we see Clark and Chloe at the torch, and this is where we get half of our explanation about what's coming from. Chloe's examining this piece of glass. And there's some green goo on it, too. And she gets it on her hand, and her hand, like, disappears.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good, weird-looking special effect, right?
That was a good effect.
But, yeah, I mean, the whole how long do you think it takes him to, Jeff, to put this goo all over his body?
I don't want to know.
But, yeah, so we figured out here that that's what's going on. There's no ghost. It's a guy who's putting goo on him, or a girl, for that matter, right?
Yeah.
But it all ties together because they realize that, oh, we're doing this blood drive. Let's check this blood against, the blood drive we have. And
yeah.
Clark, he
remembers exactly, like, when they did the, like, when they were scheduled for it, because he was helping Lana.
Yeah, Clark and his encyclopedic photographic memory. And Chloe's like, wow, you have a freakishly good memory.
Yeah.
That's Superman. He's smart. Okay, he's not stupid. I hate that people think Superman is stupid. He has the knowledge of the 28 known galaxies. He knows
that's
what
right.
he's doing. His computation power. But I did like how Chloe said, so what do we do next? Should we call the police? Because that's what you should think, kids. All right, you should,
yeah.
You know. But Clark's like, what? That we're going after Invisible Man? They never believe us. So that's a legitimate response to that. Then we have a short but good little scene here between Clark and Whitney. And he sees Whitney just hanging out in the cafeteria by himself. Yep. Which kind of makes sense. If he's having trouble at home, he doesn't want to be there. And just thank God it wasn't at the beanery, right?
Yeah.
I expected it to be at the beanery. So Clark goes up to him and starts talking to him. And I like how Whitney's like, what is it with you and my girlfriend, Kent?
Yeah.
So they have a short but very honest conversation. He's like, I see the way you look at her. And Clark's like, at least I pay attention to her.
It's like firing right back.
Clark just comes out and says, look, I saw the medicine in your backpack. What's going on? And Whitney explains that his dad is sick. He's been in Metropolis. And with all the pain that Lana's had with her parents in the past, that he didn't want to put her through that again. Which, you know what? I actually can kind of sympathize with Whitney here. You know? Yeah. Like, he's actually trying. I mean, the end result is obviously not. You know, Lana's clueless about all this, so she doesn't know how to react to it. Yeah. But I understand Whitney's motivations here. So he's not just being a jerk, you know? And that's this episode. It starts to kind of flesh out the Whitney we see in the second half of season one, where he's not just like the jock boyfriend of Lana. He's actually a guy that has his own stuff going on.
Yeah.
So then we go back. We go back to the beanery. I guess this is the reason why this scene was at school. Because we go back to the beanery, and Clark and Lex are there. And Clark has been updating Lex on, like, you know, his progress with Lana.
You know, the Lana initiative, as he called it.
Yeah, the Lana initiative. And Clark asks Lex, have you ever found something out that you didn't know? And Lex says, in my experience, there's no such thing as too much information. Which is so good. Like, every line in this episode, Lex, is so quotable.
Yep.
They basically, you know, not too many words. Clark tells Lex what's going on, and yeah. Lex says, I'd go for it. But that's what I like about you, Clark. You wouldn't. So that really establishes their different attitudes towards things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Amy comes by and is talking to Lex and Clark, and Clark decides to x-ray her.
And he sees the watch.
Yeah, he sees the watch under, you know, under her sleeve, which, you know, leads Clark and Lex back to the mansion, and they investigate Amy's room. And, you know, I did like the fact that Amy's mom was a presence here. You know, yes. For a few episodes, we had these kids who are just doing their own thing.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Luther. And Lex is very understanding about this because, well, they open this on a wardrobe or cupboard or whatever it is.
And it's the Hey Arnold shrine.
Yes, exactly. It's this shrine to Lex Luthor, and it's got all these promotional pictures and all these things of Lex. Did you notice the Lex Luthor Robs Bank headline in the
yep.
back? Yeah, like, that's a good continuity show. Using those props for good effect. I'm like, how did she get all these pictures anyway? She obviously had stolen a picture of little Lex, because we got the yep. kid Lex from the pilot in there. So Lex reaches back in there and he pulls out his watch. And this isn't one of those other instances of just bad ADR, which is additional dialogue recording. And he's like, my watch. I'm like, yeah, we know it's your watch. Like, you didn't need to spell it out for us, but somebody watched the episode of the final cut and they're like, you know what, we need to connect the dots for these audiences. We need to establish that was the watch he was looking for.
Yep.
Yeah, like I said, Lex handles it pretty well. He tells the mom, like, look,
she needs help.
Yeah, she needs help. I'll pay for it. But all that being said, you guys should probably leave the mansion. So after this, Clark goes to the loft, and Lana's like, you made it. Clark says, sorry, I'm late. Yeah, you're late. A day late.
Yep.
This is supposed to be yesterday. I know it's nitpicking, but it's a big deal. It's just so funny to me. Now there's somewhat of an explanation here, and it actually is. So they have this great dialogue with the sunset, and it's kind of symbolic of their
it's a great scene.
Yeah, because Clark is he's trying to do the right thing, and he basically says Alana's confused because Clark she thinks Clark had wanted this. And Clark,
well, and the other thing is, like, she's, like, at this point, she's kind of all about it now.
She's finally come around to Clark, and the sunset is, like, symbolic of Clark's window of opportunity, or the window of opportunity for the two of them to get together.
Yep. Because she's like, you missed it.
And I like what Clark says here. He says, well, if you were my girlfriend and you were in Whitney's loft, I would hope he would do the same thing.
Yep.
but there's an interesting behind-the-scenes story here, because the sunset was apparently a very expensive special effect. It
yeah.
was like a $50,000 special effect to put in the sunset, because originally, as they had written it, they were going to have like the wide shot, and then they were just going to cut the two tight shots of Clark and Lana and not see out the window.
Yeah.
But the way they shot it, because this was the second unit shot this, because yeah. they, well, let me just, to quote the Smallville Official Companion, let me just read what co-executive producer Ken Horton had to say. Eventually, we decided to reshoot a scene, which was a financial mistake, but creatively, the best mistake we made the entire year. We shot the scene between Clark and Lana in the loft where she comes up to see the sunset. What was supposed to happen was they were between the camera and the window. We would look out the window and the sun beginning the set. Then the rest of the scene was supposed to take place between Clark and Lana without us looking out the window. because we were creating the sunset from scratch as an effect, which was expensive. They had budgeted for 2 green screen shots, but in the end, James Marshall, who was doing all of our second unit filming then, shot it over the shoulder, so we were seeing out the window the whole time. There were 17 green screen shots, and it cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 to put in the sunset, but it was magnificent. Okay. So it cost them a little extra money, but I think it really added to the whole ambiance of the scene. So it all worked out. And since they mentioned that was a reshoot, I'm thinking originally like that was supposed to be the next day, right? Yeah. But they reshuffled everything, and they had to have Clark find stuff out about Whitney in time, and they had to have all the pieces fall into place. But I think it worked out great because you needed a scene like this between Clark and Lana. I feel like it was necessary because with all the things they've been through so far this season,
yeah,
they needed to kind of like address where they were, because they were in a really weird weird place as they continue to be for a while after this.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's night and we cut back to Luther Mansion, and Amy and her family are leaving with her mom, and Amy turns around and says, "I just wanted to feel close to you," and you know, you kind of feel sorry for her. She's a sympathetic character. Yeah. And the mom explains, "Okay, well, my husband's gonna be back tomorrow and clean everything out, and we're gonna go." So who are we forgetting? Jeff. He's so invisible they even forgot to take him with them. Like, didn't we have another kid? It's just Lex calls, like, you know, I think the hospital or something he calls Victoria, but then the phone gets knocked out of his hand. His Nokia early 2000s phone gets knocked out of his hand.
Top of the line.
And you know, Jeff ties him up in like the Luther Armory or something, and starts talking to him. Now, and this is where the episode gets really cheesy, in my opinion.
Yeah, because like, he starts monologuing.
He's like, "Oh, we were the help, and we're supposed to be practically invisible." And I like it. I like Lex is like, "Jeff, is that you?" And he's like, "I'm surprised you even know my name." And I was thinking that too. I was like, "I'm surprised Lex knows his name." So that was good. But Lex, man, he will not stop with the one-liners because Jeff explains like he tried to scare Victoria away because it was really upsetting Amy, and Amy loved Lex. Lex says,
"He's like, that kind of love could get me arrested."
Yes, so good, so good. And you know, Clark busts in finally.
Yep.
He gets a mace to the face.
Mace to the face,
which is a terrible special effect.
It's an iconic shot for the series because you see it all the time.
Yeah, well, even Miles Miller, the executive producer, says there was a great scene in the armory with a mace coming into Clark's face. I'm like, no, that was a terrible scene. Like, that was one of the most CGI looking things I've seen on the show. Yeah. But yes, it's the idea of it is iconic. And then Jeff even comments like, "Oh yeah, Luther's talked about you, that you're special. I'm special too." And they have one of the lamest in fights of the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff monologues more. He explains how he got the goo and the green rose and the stuff we mentioned earlier. And remember, he's naked throughout this whole time.
Yep.
Which is funny to think about. Yeah, so then he kind of like jumps on Clark's back, and Clark throws him backwards into this scaffolding of painting. And this red and yellow paint falls down. Like, what is it, Smallville High School? Like,
apparently.
Why they paint the gym or something? And why? I don't know. Anyway, and it's just so we can see him. I didn't really think that was necessary, but I guess they wanted you to see that he was knocked out.
Yeah. Yes.
And, you know, I guess Clark just threw him so hard that knocked him out.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. I want to add another category to the Smallville tally board here, Lance, and you can help me. We've had some feedback about, oh, we should add a category where people get knocked out in order to avoid seeing Clark use his powers.
Well, in that case, Lex.
Yes. Got it today. And that's why I want to say that, because you know, Jeff throws Lex against like the brick wall.
Uh huh. There's not even a mark on his head.
Loses consciousness. So, but let's back time here real quick. We'll just, you know, you can help me. You have a similarly encyclopedic knowledge of Smallville. Yeah. In the pilot, I don't think anybody got knocked out for that purpose.
No.
In Metamorphosis, Lana was already like knocked out for another reason, so that doesn't count there. In Hothead, Jonathan already knew his secrets, so that doesn't count.
Nope.
And then Chloe didn't see him use his powers. Then X-Ray. X-Ray, I think I will say X-Ray, because Tina chokes Lana to the point where she passes out. And then Clark shows up, so I'm going to count X-Ray.
Okay.
All right, so we're retroactively, as Smallville does, we're retconning some and adding this category. So X-Ray has one, all right? And then in Cool, Chloe didn't see him use his powers when he broke open the ice or whatever.
Okay.
And at the end, Martha's out there, and obviously she knows he has powers. Hourglass, no one got knocked out. No. His secret was totally ruined, but nobody got knocked out. And then in Craving. Okay, so Craving, Amy Adams' character, Jody, smashes Pete against, like, the floor. Mm-hmm. And he gets knocked out. Although, I don't think he really needed to get knocked out. So, I don't sure. What would you...
I don't think he did either.
Because Clark, he can't use his powers because of all the kryptonite. Take notes, Batman v Superman. He can't use his powers because of all the kryptonite.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Should we count that one? Or...
No, let's count it.
Let's count it. Because, damn. Like, getting your head knocked against the tile floor.
Exactly.
No wonder all these people have amnesia all the time.
Yeah, they have massive CTE.
Craving. Okay, then in a Jitters, nobody gets knocked out for Clark to use his powers.
Okay.
And then in Rogue, nobody gets knocked out for Clark to use his powers. That's the problem. Too many people see Clark use his powers in Rogue. Yeah. So then this will be number three. Then this will be Lex getting knocked out. So Clark can bust in there and use his powers. So we're at three. So the Smallville tally board is at three. And I'll think of some terminology here when I title up the episode description. I haven't thought of it yet. I don't want it to be like a sentence long. Character gets knocked out so Clark can use his powers without them seeing that.
Yeah.
I got to come up with something more concise. But cool. All right. So we're up to speed now. That will be a category. And I think that's a very good category moving forward because that happens a lot. I think one of the most stupidest ones, and we'll get to it down the road, is in Crush when the Adam Brody from the OC hits Chloe with a horseshoe.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the most obvious ones to me. All right, so we're at three now. Clark and Lex talk a little bit more in the end, and Clark apologizes for trashing the armory, but Lex says, it's cool, my mom never liked that room anyway.
Yep.
And we get our final scene, which is a combination of stock footage from the pilot. Did you notice this?
I did.
Like, this is clearly just alternate takes of Clark watching Lana and Whitney from his loft from the pilot.
But we get pop music, though.
Yeah, we do. We get pop music. Of all the songs this episode, I liked the I Wanna Feel the Way You Make Me Feel When I'm With You by Simple Plan. It's my jam. So that'll be the song to play us out. So, I mean, and that's the episode. Like, we see Clark. I mean, he sees that Lana and Whitney make up, and I mean he's upset about it, I guess. But he took the high road, and that's what
he did. The right thing, because that's what Superman does.
Yes. So as we joke about, like, Superman, folks, breaking up relationships left and right, we joke about that. But at the end of the day, he did the right thing. That's what matters. And for, like I said, this was all very necessary. I mean, for them,
it was.
Because they were at a weird spot here.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is a significant episode because now Whitney is kind of, you know, like on notice, on the clock, because now, you know, Lana's officially conflicted. She might be, you know, in a relationship with Whitney, but she's not happy, you know, so she's intrigued by Clark officially. And then also so is Chloe.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So we did, I know you mentioned earlier, Lance, we get a couple of shots here, lingering shots on Chloe, I should say, when Clark walks off. She kind of has, like, a logging shot when he walks out of the barn. And then earlier she kind of is, like, checking him out when he walks off from the school. Mm-hmm. So they're really starting to turn up the heat on that love triangle. Even though they both told each other in the last episode, oh, Clark and I are just friends.
Yeah, they were both lying.
And you know why that is? Because they're high school girls. You cannot trust high school girls. Okay? It's just we're kidding. If you're a high school girl and you listen to this, thank you. I appreciate your listenership.
Yes.
But you can't be trusted.
I would never do anything to hurt you.
I know that.
But if I said what I really wanted to say right now, that's what I'd do. I'd hurt you.
Why don't you take a shot? I'm pretty strong.
I know, but I think Whitney needs to know that too.
But you didn't want to talk about Whitney.
I don't. But if you were my girlfriend standing in Whitney's loft, I'd hope you'd say the same thing.
Schumer got a 7.7 out of 10 rating on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it 4 out of 5 in his review. And here's a little brief passage from his review that kind of sums up some of my thoughts on the episode. But all in all, this is more an episode about Clark's romance with Lana, how he handles it, and the ramifications of being a selfish person. Clark knows that he can get Lana. He's a better man, the smarter man, and unbeknownst to her, the stronger man. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't. He's idealistic. Good for Superman, bad for practical application. So, I agree. Like, That's the heart of this episode. And that's the deal with Smallville. In these early episodes, even like the when they have the cheesiest or most questionable freaks of the week, like there was a good message or character story going on there under the surface.
Yeah.
So with that being said, Lance, what would you give Shimmer?
B plus.
B plus. Okay. Yeah. That's strong. Stronger than I would have expected.
Yeah. Like it's the strength of the character things that happened, I think, is kind of what gives it that. I think the thing that kind of like keeps it from an A for me is I didn't really like Amy all that much. Granted, like, you know, she was, you know, they made her eventually into a sympathetic character. I think they probably could have developed her more, like I mentioned earlier. That might have helped. But the Clark and Lana stuff is what is the strength of the episode. And of course, Lex. Anything Lex does is great.
On the strength of Lex alone, I'm going to give this a B.
Okay.
Because I thought just all the stuff with him and his mom, and then obviously whenever he has scenes with Lionel, you know, it just really elevates anything. So I'm going to give this one just a solid B. You know, it's not a great episode, not a bad episode, just kind of middle of the pack. Mm. Which, when I say that, sounds like a C. But all the intangibles of the episode really elevate it. So yeah. I agree. Yeah, this was a good episode. Now, what else did we talk about? The Bechdel test, right?
Yeah.
Two women having a conversation. Doesn't involve a man or isn't focused on a man. You know, one of these days I need to get the official, like, Webster's definition of what the Bechdel test is, right? Mm-hmm. But does this episode pass, Lance?
No.
You're right. There's not... It doesn't pass. Which is, again, we have two female guest stars. We have three female guest stars.
Yep.
Right? We have Victoria, we have Amy, we have Amy's mom.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we have, oh, God, we have four, because we have Aunt Nell.
Nell comes back.
This episode is full of women, and none of them have a scene together.
Nope.
And when they do, do any of them have a scene together?
No, they don't. Well, like, Amy has a scene with
Victoria,
like,
where she dumps the stuff on her. Right. Wow. Come on, Smallville. Step your game up.
Yep.
All right, Lance, it was fun talking about Shimmer this week with you. If people want to find you on the internet, where can they go?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm at Sir Lance Laster.
And if you want to find me personally on Twitter, I'm at MoronZach, MoreOnZach. And for the show itself, Always Hold On to Smallville, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville. That's AlwaysMallville with one S, because Twitter has a character limit. And you can also find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville, or send us an email at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. No, that's not our email address. Or send us an email at Always... Or send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com. One S as well. We're going for the continuity across the board. Like, if you typed in facebook.com/alwaysmallville, you'd also get our Facebook page. So because Twitter has that character limit, I just embraced it, and it's one S all the way through. So discussion and Twitter comments and emails we're getting. We're a young show here, and we're growing our audience. I really appreciate you guys listening to what we have to say. Really, it's encouraging, you know, because we're sitting here at a computer talking.
Yeah.
And we don't know. We don't know if people like what we're saying or anything like that. So it's really great, and really, not that I would stop doing it, but it encouraged me to keep going. Because we've got a long road ahead. And I'm going to need all the encouragement I get, especially if we get into those in the dregs of season 6 and 7.
Woo.
So, anyway, guys, we'll be back next episode to talk about Hug, which is about handshakes. And they really should have titled it something different. I guess Hug is a better title than Handshake, Lance.
I guess.
But Embrace, Contract, I don't know. We need to talk sometime about alternate episode titles.
Okay.
But yeah, yes, next week is Hug, where there's no hugging. There's handshaking and kissing and shooting. It's a fun episode. So stay tuned next time. Until then, always hold on to Smallville. I wanna feel the way you make me feel.